Councilman, I've decided to have private conferences during the siesta period, and consequently I'll be available for conferences 1:30 to 2 and 2 to 2:30, and then our afternoon conference is at 3 o'clock. Again, to remind you, to make a good confession is of the essence of making a good retreat. As we said last night, my plan for this retreat is to use the 12 conference periods between now and the closing one to cover the fundamentals of our faith contained in the Apostles' Creed. This conference, therefore, is on I believe in God, the Father Almighty, Creator of heaven and earth. Everything in our faith as Catholics is contained in this first article. Once you believe in God, the Father Almighty, Creator of heaven and earth, you believe by implication in everything else which we believe on divine revelation. It might be well to observe that our knowledge of God, and remember, faith is knowledge. Faith is knowledge. We do indeed believe in God, but we also are to know God by reason. And I'm afraid for many people, they have faith in God, but have never really used their minds to reason logically to the existence of a Creator who is master of the universe. When we say, I believe, this of course implies that besides telling us about himself from the world in which we live, we have a mind that can think, and there is a nature on which we can reflect. In both the Book of Wisdom of the Old Testament, he, by the way, is missing in the Protestant Bible. What a pity. In both the Book of Wisdom of the Old Law and St. Paul's first letter to the Romans, we are told that from what God has created, from the world of nature, we can, we should logically, rationally conclude to the existence of a God from whom everything in the created world which exists came into being. In reasoning as far as I can with atheists, I've asked them, Did the world have a beginning? They better say yes or no. If it had no beginning, it would not exist. It would begin. Who brought it into beginning? If there had been nothing, past tense, there would be nothing now. From nothing comes nothing. There must have been a being who always exists, who could not exist. However, our concentration is on faith. And faith, by definition, is accepting on the words of someone else what our reason tells us the one in whom we believe knows what we are being told and is trustworthy, is believable. The only people we are to believe in are those who reason tells us know what they're talking about and are honest in telling us what they know. If there is one being who knows what he is saying and is surely trustworthy in telling us what he knows, it is God. Over the years in teaching theology, I have stressed that the first article of the Creed tells us something about what we call the attributes of God. We use the word attribute as a noun, but at root, attribute is a verb. We attribute to God the qualities that God has, but only God has. We have qualities. God has attributes. What are the chief attributes of God? Otherwise known as qualities of God, which we have some knowledge of from the world of creation, and attribute to God. God is absolutely one. He is the only beginning who must exist. Everything that exists somehow began or begins from Him. In other words, as Christians, we are not polytheists. We believe in one God. And as the present Holy Father goes to great lengths to explain, especially in his document, Splendor Veritatis, Splendor of the Truth, there is a growing, what shall we call it, a growing monotheism, one God, in which the self, each person, is becoming a God to himself. My mind decides what is true. My will decides what is good. The polytheism of the non-Christian world has been substituted by a paganism, that does nothing less than deify each individual. Pro-choicers, they coined the term, consider themselves the final arbiter of what they will accept with their minds and what they will choose with their wills. The God we believe in is the true God. This God is not a figment of our imagination. This God really exists. And throughout this retreat, we shall concentrate on the word truth. What is truth? Conformity of the mind with reality. When God really exists, this glass of water, this watch next to me, the amplifier into which I am speaking, if my mind thinks this is an amplifier, that's a watch, and that is a glass of water. If that's on my mind, and objectively, in reality, outside of the mind, this is an amplifier, that is a watch, and that is a glass of water. Then, and only then, does my mind possess the truth. But let's be clear and honest. The human mind is incredibly imaginative. We can conceive thoughts about things that don't exist. As I've been telling one audience after another, 90% of all the books borrowed from American libraries in a given year are fiction. America is living in a dream world, in a concoction of its own imagination. How we better be clear. Our minds are made to possess the truth. And what is truth? Truth is knowledge of reality. This God in whom we believe is a living God. But let's be again very clear. We too are living human beings. But our life depends for its very existence and its continued existing on God. God depends on no one, absolutely no one. God is not only living, God is life, infinite life itself. All life comes from and depends on God. God is eternal. And not only eternal in the sense that he will never cease to be. God is eternal because he never began to be. Oh, how well I know. As I go through these divine attributes, from the years of teaching my own Jesuits their theology, as I've said some of you more than once, in my 25 years of teaching theology to my Jesuit students, a very seldom asked a question. They were always making objections. There is a being who must exist, who cannot not exist. There is a being who not only lives, but is life, from whom and on whom all life and the universe depends. God is incomprehensible. What a difference between knowing what the word understand and the word comprehend means. We are to grow in our understanding of our faith. That's why we're making this retreat. But unlike God, we shall never comprehend, which means fully understand everything. And what a temptation, how well I know, what a temptation to what we call good minds, the intellectuals. They want to understand fully. That is madness. Only God fully understands everything. And though we are to grow in our understanding of God, we shall never comprehend, which means fully understand God. The trials in our lives, the crosses that God sends us, the pain, the disappointment, the unfulfilled desires. Don't try to comprehend suffering. But we are, with God's grace, to go in our understanding of who God is and how he deals with us in our lives. The God in whom we believe is pure spirit. And we use the adjective pure to identify God as spirit with no matter to his being. How materialistic our culture has become. If something is unimportant, we say, it does not matter. My God! As though matter was a final norm of importance. Imagine telling somebody, he does not spirit to me. John, somebody would ask me, are you sick? God is pure spirit. The reality which cannot not exist. The reality from whom everything in existence has come into being. Has no matter. Has no size, no shape, no quantity, no measurability. And that is reality. Not only is God real, he is the reality from whom every other reality has come into being. How casually we can speak about the spiritual life. This is the life of reality. We are only as holy, only as pleasing to God, as our spirit is united with the uncreated spirit of God. God is absolutely unchangeable. In theology, we speak of God's immutability. Once we say that, we identify the measure of anything being only as binding on the human conscience as it is unchangeable. In one area after another of our American culture, we speak of things being, well, contrary to the law. It is contrary to the law to object to the murder of unborn children. It is contrary to the law and spelled out in long polysyllabic legalistic terms. It is contrary to the law. Dare I say it? To, well, discriminate, as the law says, against homosexuals. Whose law? Whose law? If there is one thing that during this retreat I hope to make clear, we are living in an age in which the unchangeable God and therefore the unchangeable laws of this immutable God are being challenged contradicted, legislated against by the laws of human beings who have, if they ever had, faith in an unchangeable God. Finally, God is perfectly happy. Happy in and of Himself, without dependence on any other being for His beatitude. And our happiness depends in absolute mathematical measure on our conformity of will to the will of God. There is no happiness. That's a demonic lie. There is no happiness in doing our own will. The only happiness that any creature can experience is in, and then we use that verb, submitting His will to the will of God. And this happiness is not only in heaven where we enter eternity. This happiness depends on the conformity of our created wills to the uncreated will of God. Only in that measure shall we be happy. 50 years in the priesthood, I've dealt with too many people, many deeply agonizingly unhappy. But, let me be clear again, never dissociate happiness from pain. Pain is whatever is contrary to our wills. Can we be happy in doing what is contrary to our wills? Yes. Can we be happy in accepting what we do not like? Yes. What a difference between pleasure, the verb I normally use, for the satisfaction of doing our own will, and happiness in doing the will of God. God is not a solitary being. God, as I keep repeating, is a society. God is a community. God cannot be a solitary. God is already, the first book of the Bible tells us, God identifies Himself as we. That us, God says, that us is God. Let us make man to our own image and likeness. There exist societies. among the angels and among human beings, only because God himself cannot not be what he was from eternity, a society of Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. We say that God not only loves, but God is love. And the foundation of love, hear it, is loving another person. There must be three persons in God for the revealed expression, God is love, to be verified. Within the Godhead, there is a plurality of persons. So there might be love, not just within God, but for God himself to be love. As we go through this retreat, I will stress more than once how we need, as God has, other persons in order to be able, not a verb, to be able to love. That's why there are other persons in the world. That way, God, we might practice love in the strictest theological language. There is no such thing as true, authentic self-love. We do, needless to say, love ourselves. There is no third commandment. Love God, love your neighbor, and third, love yourself. You fathers, does a child love itself before it enters the age of reason? We love ourselves spontaneously. We love ourselves constantly. We love ourselves patiently. But if we are to follow in the footsteps, shall I say, of God, we must learn from the Holy Trinity that to practice the love that God wants us to practice to reach our heavenly destiny, we must have other persons. We must give ourselves to them, and trusting they will give themselves to us. We say in the Apostles' Creed, I believe in God the Father Almighty, Creator of heaven and earth. God is almighty because he is all-powerful. He is omnipotent. What do we mean? God is almighty because he can do whatever he wants to do. God wanted to bring us into existence. When we speak of I believe in God the Father Almighty, Creator of heaven and earth. 108 Professing. Your professing faith in God's power to bring into existence what did not exist except for the power of God. There are a dozen standard theological definitions of divine omnipotence. For me, the favorite is, God is almighty because He alone can create. Can bring into existence what, except for His almighty will, would not come into being. I said last night, one reason, the main reason, why I thought we should concentrate on our faith in this retreat is because the most fundamental articles of our Catholic faith are being undermined by those who, may God forgive them, call themselves Catholics. A Karl Rummer, one of my own fellow Jesuits, never accepted the infinity of God. Teilhard de Chardin, another Jesuit, never accepted God's almighty power to create. How we need to believe that God is almighty. Recently a doctoral dissertation was written by a professor at Loyola University here in Chicago on Thomas Merton. Merton wrote two shelves of books. He never accepted God's infinite, almighty power to create. The New Age movement, which is permeating one once Christian and Catholic culture after another. In its foundations, denies God as the almighty creator of heaven and earth. Centering prayer, so widespread in professedly Catholic circles, at root is praying to oneself deep down. At the center of your being is you, and you have not come from an almighty creating God. When we see that God is creator, we know, of course, that God created the visible, sensibly perceptible world of the mountains and seas, the forests and rivers. God created the planets, the sun, moon, and stars. But at the peak of God's creation, God created out of nothing beings like himself and having a mind that can know and a will that can choose and love.